sorry. Lost the place here. Yeah, this is Canto 2 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 2, text is number 23. Aho Bhakiyam Stanakalakutam.
Aho Bhakiyam Stanakalakutam.
Jikhang Sayapaya Yadapya Sadhvi.
Jikhang Sayapaya Sadhvi.
Lebhe gatim dhatri uchitam tatonyam.
Lebhe gatim dhatri uchitam tatonyam.
Kam vadayalum sharanam vrajem.
Kam vadayalum sharanam vrajem.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness Worldwide. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast? Purport. Here is an example of the extreme mercy of the Lord. Let's all turn our cell phones off. Just to facilitate concentration. Here is an example of the extreme mercy of the Lord, even to his enemy. It is said that a noble man accepts the good qualities of a person of doubtful character, just as one accepts nectar from a stock of poison. In his babyhood, he was administered deadly poison by Putana, a she-demon who tried to kill the wonderful baby. Of course, I think we all know who he is. And because she was a demon, it was impossible for her to know the Supreme Lord. Even though playing the part of a baby, because she was a demon, it was impossible for her to know that the Supreme Lord, even though playing the part of a baby, was no less than the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. His value as the Supreme Lord did not diminish upon his becoming a baby to please his devotee, Yashoda. The Lord may assume the form of a baby or a shape other than that of a human being, but it doesn't make the slightest difference. He is always the same Supreme. A living creature, however powerful he may become by dint of severe penance, can never become equal to the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna accepted the motherhood of Putana because she pretended to be an affectionate mother, allowing Krishna to suck her breast. The Lord accepts the least qualification of the living entity and awards him the highest reward. That is the standard of his character. Therefore, who but the Lord can be the ultimate shelter? Very wonderful verse and purport. Who is speaking this verse?
Uddhava.
Uddhava is speaking to Vidura. And this is remembrance of Lord Krishna. After they've all left the planet, Uddhava is speaking to Vidura here. Anyway, so it comes to this. After he's said several things about the Lord, the last verse he said, "O Vidura, does it not pain us, his servitors, when we remember that he, Lord Krishna, used to stand before King Ugrasen, who was sitting on the royal throne, and used to submit explanations before him, saying, 'O my Lord, please let it be known unto you.'" This is what you do when you're in front of a king. So he's offering these wonderful glorifications of the Lord. This is a very special verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam because it's said that from hearing this verse, Shukdev Goswami had taken his birth. We all know the story. He was how many years in the womb of his mother?
16 years.
And we get worried after 8 months. So, 16 years And the reason he did not take birth after even 16 years in the womb is because he was a liberated Brahmavadi. He had realized the absolute truth in its impersonal feature called Brahman. Spiritual, all-pervading spiritual reality. The all-pervading spiritual reality that pervades all existence and activates our lives with life. He is the life of all life, this Supreme Lord in his impersonal feature as life itself. Prana, sometimes we call him in the Mundaka Upanishad. There's an interesting verse in Mundaka Upanishad. It says, where I live in Vrindavan, everyone comes to Vrindavan expecting to find Krishna hiding behind a tree or within the bushes somewhere. Or they expect Krishna to come and steal their butter or yogurt or whatever. But before we see Krishna in that form, we generally have to realize the form of the Lord known as Prana. And Prana is, according to Mundaka Upanishad, that form of the Lord which stands before us with an upraised thunderbolt weapon ready to strike us dead. This is the harsh bliss of Brahman realization. Anyone who has read the English Nobel laureate poet T.S. Eliot, he wrote a poem called Four Quarters. If you're interested, you can look it up. But you can understand that he had quite a bit of insight into the nature of this Brahman. And this realization of spirit is the precondition for actually understanding the Srimad Bhagavatam. If we actually want to understand Krishna or Krishna's pastimes with his devotees, such as, you know, this Putanavat is one of his leelas, or what to speak of Das Leela and other activities that the Lord has performed, then we have to first realize that we are not the material body. This is why all self-realized acharyas and bona fide gurus, such as Srila Prabhupada, they place emphasis primarily on this point. Aham Brahmasmi. You have to realize what is this Brahman. But that Brahman realization should expand and become localized with the appreciation that the Lord, that same Brahman, that spiritual essence, the Supreme, is actually within my heart. He's ready to give directions as I need, intelligence as I require. He's ready to reciprocate, in fact, if I render some service. And at that point, we begin to recognize that there's Bhagavan. Vadanti tatva vidas tatvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti shabdyate. The first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam tells us. The sages tell us that the same supreme truth is realized in three different ways. Just like we can say the sun is coming in the window here behind us. We can see the sun has risen a few hours ago, and the sun is coming in the window. If you're sitting in the very back, you may be feeling uncomfortable because the sun is in the room. But if the sun actually enters the room, what will happen? The entire world will be destroyed. What to speak of this room? You see? So we have sunshine, we have the sun planet, and within the sun planet, who stays within the sun planet? Surya. Surya Narayana. So that's in the Rig Veda when we chant Gayatri Mantra in the morning. Anybody know this? What is it? No. Not Gayatri Mantra. It's from Rig Veda. Jayam Sada Jayam Sada Savitra Mandala Madhyavarti Narayana Sarasajasana Sannivishtaha Keyuravan Kanaka Kundalavan Kiriti Hari Hiranmaya Vapohu Tritashanka Chakraha. This is Narayan, Surya Narayan. The sun god is within the sun planet. So just as you have sunshine, sun globe, and sun god, so similarly you have Brahman realization, you have Paramatma realization, and you have Bhagavan realization. They're very different. To appreciate the sunshine is a very different experience than to actually go to the sun. And going to the sun is a very different experience from actually meeting the sun god. The sun god. Who is this sun god? Yachakshuresha Savitasakala Grahanam Raja. He is the king of all the planets. Samasta Sura Murtiresha Tejaha. And he has infinite power, infinite effulgence, infinite shining, the source of all life in this world. Any biologists here? You know. Nothing happens in this world without the sun. You take away the sun, we're all dead. All life depends on the sun. Ashesha Teja, and he's maintaining all life since time immemorial. That is why the sun is considered to be the representative of the Supreme Lord. He has Ashesha Teja. Eko Bahunam Yovidatati Kaman. The definition of the Supreme, one definition, is that among all eternal, conscious, living beings, one of them is supplying all the others. That's God. So, this is within the mundane realm, this is the sun. So he's considered to represent the Lord, and therefore we call him Surya Narayanam. But to meet the sun, God, is very, very different than just going to the sun if you could. We know what happens. You can't even get close. You'll be incinerated. And then the sunshine is a different thing. So in this way, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Now, Krishna is Bhagavan. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Ete cha angsha kalaha pungsas, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. In this same first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described that there are many different forms of the Lord. They've all been described. His avatars, his kalas, his amshas, his parts and parcels, his expansions, etc. But of all of these, there is one who is the supreme, and that is Krishna. Therefore, Brahma Samhita, which was found in South India. Where in South India?
Adi Keshava.
Where is Adi Keshava?
In Kerala.
Tiruvattura. Mm-hmm. Near Kerala, on Tamil Nadu border. Anybody from that district knows Adi Keshava. So, even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought back this book, Brahma Samhita, from that place. 500 years ago. How much of the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy is based on that book? So much. In that the verse I just quoted about Surya is from that book only. And similarly, so many other statements, authoritative statements about the position of Krishna vis-a-vis his creation, his expansions, the demigods, the Brahman effulgence, Param, everything is there. You see? That means that 500 years ago, in the extreme south, far away from Bengal, where Gaudiya Vaishnavism is, they say, the home of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, there was this traditional understanding of Krishna that we're teaching today. It's not just a question of party policy. Aisa lagta hai. Pratit hota hai. There must have been some, this was recognized. That's the point. Brahma Samhita.
Was it written by
him? Huh?
Some people say it was written by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
No.
It was in the temple, I think.
They have more integrity than that. He brought back two books from South India that he highly appreciated. One is Brahma Samhita, the other one is Krishna Karnamritam. Krishna Karnamritam from Vilva Mangal Thakur. He was a resident in probably Satara district, Maharashtra, near the Krishna Venva River. That's another story. So this Brahma Samhita says about Krishna as Bhagavan, confirms, if you want some independent authority. Because there's Agama and then there's Nigama, right? Nigama means the Shastras, or the Vedas, and the corollary, Srimad Bhagavatam. Agama means literatures that are consonant with it, but not necessarily of the same caliber, we might say, or same pedigree, you might say. So Brahma Samhita is technically considered to be in this Agama class. So Brahma Samhita says, Ishwaraha Paramaha Krishnaha Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govindaha Sarva Karana Karanam. This supreme Ishwara is Krishna. And his body is not made out of the same things that our bodies are made out of. What are our bodies made out of? First of all, we don't think about this too much, but first of all, it's the mind, the false ego, the intelligence. That's really what's operating everything behind the scenes, or maybe I should say inside of the scenes. Then you've got the gross material body made out of bhumi, apa, anala, vayu, kham, ityadi. And then you've got this mind-body complex together, and we're rotating in so many different species of life, and one body after another, one planet and universe after another. A brahmanda brahmite kono bhagyaban jeev guru krishna prasade pai bhakti lata beech. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in his Bengali Chaitanya Charitamrita says. Actually, we say it's Bengali, but you might call it even Mani Pravala. Mani Pravala means a mix of the vernacular and Sanskrit. It's a half of it is Sanskrit, in fact. He's a great scholar, Krishna Das Kaviraj, therefore he's called. Anyway, so this Brahma Samhita confirms that Krishna is the Ishwara Parama. This is the point. So he's not forced to take birth the way that we are forced to take birth. He doesn't have to come by dint of karma, and he doesn't have to accept this material body. His body is made out of Sat Chit Ananda. Sat Chit Ananda means existence, awareness, and ecstasy. This is what he's made out of, Krishna. This is his body, transcendental category, spiritual. So this Krishna we're talking about here, when Putana came with the intention to kill Krishna, she was calculating that he's just a little baby. She's not calculating that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a Sat-Chit Ananda Vigraha, which is specifically designed to mimic that of some ordinary baby in this material world. This is what Krishna does. This is the wonder of his yoga maya potency, that he artfully constructs a situation that appears as if he's just a baby and we can all figure him out very easily. But it's not like that. It's not like that. And every once in a while, you get a glimmer of his divinity because he does something absolutely over the top, completely impossible, such as, you know, Trinavarta. What did he do with Trinavarta? Tornado demon came. And Krishna took a ride. And when he was done playing, then he held on and he became heavy enough that this demon came crashing down. And then the gopis were completely distraught. This is what he does to you when you go back to Godhead. Think about it. You still have some hope if you're not chanting yet. If you've already started chanting, finished. But the gopis were completely distraught, running around. Some Brahma Sevyamanam. Trying to figure out what to do for this poor little baby, because they also think he's only a baby. But their maya is called yoga maya. Putana's maya is called Mahamaya, the great maya, the great illusion of the, you know, in Brijbhasha they have this song about Krishna, Jadu Karata Henandalala. He's always doing his magic on us, as if casting a spell on everyone, and he controls everyone by this Mahamaya energy. How do we know that? Mayadhyakshena prakatihi suyate sacharacharam ityadi Bhagavad Gita ma esaka. He says that this prakriti is maya, is working under my direction. Many places it's confirmed. So the gopis in Vrindavan, rather, they are bewildered also by maya, but it's an antithetical maya. It is the maya that conditions those who love Krishna. And Mahamaya is the maya that conditions those who do not love Krishna. That's the difference. When we love Krishna, when we do something for Krishna, because of Krishna's wonderful qualities, such as mercy, as we see here, and we'll try to elaborate in a moment, then Krishna reciprocates with us in love. You see? And when we approach him with some other motive, then he will also, yayatha mam prapadyante tansatheva bhajami aham. Everybody reciprocates with me as they reciprocate. I will commensurately reciprocate. If you want to come and kill me, then I will kill you. And that's what he did to Putana. But when Krishna kills you, it is a special benediction. This is the point. When Krishna kills you, it's actually mercy. Because Putana, even though she came as a murderess to kill Krishna, tried to poison him. What mother will do that? You see? But he took it, no, she gave me breast milk. See how wonderful he is, how nice he is. Where do you find such a person that when you're ripped off, is this how you treat the person who rips you off? We don't have that kind of mercy, but wonderful mercy. Otherwise, how are we sitting here today? Maybe you are all pious, but I'm not. Anyway, so Krishna is so kind like this that he will deliver you even if you come to try to kill him. And when we approach Krishna with a little bit of love, then he magnifies that love and he nourishes that love and the faith that produced it, whatever little glimmer is there. And then we advance. And as if we're practicing the process of Krishna consciousness, then we will advance step by step by step. What are the steps? In the beginning, we have a little bit of passive appreciation. Oh, let me go to this program. They might say something interesting. Or I like the music. Or I'm hungry. Whatever it is. We all have some motive in the beginning when we approach Krishna. But because we've approached Krishna, this is the point. Just as Putana had a motive, demoniac motive, to kill Krishna, asadhvi, the word is used. She was not saintly. There's sadhu and sadhvi. So this is the idea. She came to kill him, but he didn't take it that way. This is the point. Why didn't he take it that way? Only because he's more merciful than we are. He took it, oh, she's mata. And so he reciprocated with her in mata, because this is Braj Leela. So when he killed her, he sucked out, we know the story, he sucked her milk, not only her milk, what else did he suck out? Her very prana, her life. And when she was killed in this way, that is to say her material body was killed in this way, but what happened to the soul, the prana, atma? She was... Okay, I'm hearing different answers. Somebody says Goloka, somebody says merge, somebody said what else?
She became a nursemaid.
She was given the position in Vaikuntha as the Lord's dhatri. This word is used here. Dhatri means nursemaid. You know, when sometimes the mother is too busy, so someone else will take care. This is what happens when you're in Vatsalya Rasa. She had some glimmer of this, maybe. We don't really know. There are stories like that. But the idea is that Krishna took it that she's acting, she's reciprocating with me as if she was mata, so I should treat her in that way. How wonderful it is. So we have to cultivate this kind of bhakti, and then we will become covered over by the yogamaya potency, as are the Vrijavasis. What happens when the Vrijavasis, something Krishna does wonderful? I was reading the other day. One time after Ekadashi, today is Yogini Ekadashi. So we're celebrating Ekadashi in the appropriate manner by hearing and chanting about Govinda. So one time after doing this, Nanda Maharaj decided the next day on Dwadashi he had to go early in the morning to take his bath. That's actually appropriate. After Ekadashi we take the bath, or after performing a sacrifice we take a ritual bath in the Ganga or the Yamuna. Nowadays, unfortunately, you cannot step into the Yamuna. You will get covered with carcinogenic chemicals. Last time, I went to Brahmandagad in Gokula, and I went to look at the river, and from one bank of the river to the other, and all the way down the river, and all the way up the river, I could see nothing but a 2-foot-high blanket of soap suds. And when I cleared away the soap suds to take a handful of Yamuna to offer back to Yamuna, this viscous, you know, sort of, you know, highly viscous, you know, liquid, blackish, you know, came out of my hand, and I had to find some bottled water to wash my hand off, because otherwise the hand was also... This is the condition of the Yamuna now. For your information, just because many people don't know, 90% of the Yamuna's water that flows out of the Himalayas is sluiced off into either Haryana or Uttaranchal for agricultural purposes, 90%. 10% he reaches Delhi, and that of that 10% of the Yamuna gel that reaches Delhi, how much do you think Delhi uses?
10%.
And the result is that at the bottom of Delhi, near the, what do they call, Okhla Barraj, then that 10% is returned into the Yamuna basin, but it's not really... I mean, you can call it Yamuna Jal, I suppose, but the point is that it's either been processed through a factory or through a human body. You take your pick. Therefore, 15 years ago, Srivats Goswami, one of the chief priests in Raghunaman Temple in Vrindavan, he had to break the tradition of five centuries that his family was following, that I just cannot bathe in this river anymore. Imagine what that feels like. We don't know, because we don't have the kind of connection that a person in his position would have with Yamuna. But it's something to think about. So recently, of course, they've started this YAP, just like in the 20 years ago, Virbhadra Misha at the Sankart Mochan Temple in Banaras. He started this GAP movement. GAP means Ganga Action Plan. So now we have YAP, Yamuna Action Plan. So they're gapping and yapping for 20, 30 years now. And we don't know what the result will be, but if we put volition into this, then something can happen. Because they have to respond. This is the way democracy works. India is the world's greatest democracy. If the people, the squeaky wheel gets oiled. Or watered, in this case. So if the people complain, then they have to do something. Because politics, it will never work. We all know the nature of Indian politics in general. Maybe things will be different with the Modi government. We don't know yet. But it's change you can believe in, I suppose. India's version. Anyway. So, Yamuna Devi. How do we get on this topic? We were
taking bath.
Huh?
Taking bath on Dwadashi.
Yes. So, Nanda Maharaj was taking bath in Yamuna, and when he took his bath, one of the peons of Varuna, who controls water everywhere, he thought, no, this person is coming. He was ignorant, actually. It says that in the Bhagavatam. He made a mistake. We all do it. So he thought that, you know, I have to arrest this person and bring him to Varuna. So he did that, and all the cowherd men, they found out that Nanda Maharaj has disappeared, and they thought, are, that now he's been taken away by Varuna, we have to do something. So they were calling out for Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Meanwhile, Nanda Maharaj was taken into Varuna's abode, and Varuna immediately saw him and said, oh, I'm so sorry, my foolish servant has committed an offense, please forgive me, this is... And he saw that everybody in the whole palace of Varuna Devi, Nanda Maharaj saw, they're all so respectful and so fearful of his son Krishna, and he couldn't figure out what's going on. This is yoga maya. And when he came back, then he reported to all the cowherd men. Now the cowherd men, they were conditioned, all the Vrijavasis in Vrindavan, they're conditioned by different degrees of this yoga maya, degrees of yoga maya, slightly different nuances of yoga maya, different flavors of yoga maya, but they're all conditioned in the same way. And none of them actually thinks that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. But after this event, some of them became doubtful. So then they, you know, some of them began to think, well, maybe Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Maybe he's, you know, he's a great demigod or something, but in general, their nature is, their love is so intimate and so intense that they can't for very long consider any other possibility. They can only consider that Krishna is our beloved hometown boy, local hero, Krishna. Everybody, Vraja Janaranjana, right? Vraja Vallava, so many names for him. What is it? So anyway, so many. So this is yoga maya. And Putana was, of course, she was conditioned by Mahamaya, but even though she was conditioned by Mahamaya, because she approached Krishna, despite what her motive was, he gave her mercy. Now, this is only Krishna who does this. This is an important point to note. Now, the BBT is preparing a scholarly edition, devotional edition also, of the Laghu Bhagavatamritam by Srila Rupa Goswami. In that book, he's compiled evidence from various Vedic literatures regarding the position of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his unique characteristics. One of Krishna's unique characteristics is that he has this incredible mercy. That is the point being emphasized in today's verse, his mercy. And he gives an example with regards to Shishupal and the killing of Shishupal. He's quoting this from Parashara Muni's Vishnu Purana. Those who are Sri Vaishnavas know Vishnu Purana. So, in the Vishnu Purana, there's a description given. Who was Shishupal originally? Does anyone know?
Yeah.
He was Jaya in the spiritual realm. Vaikuntha. when Jayavijaya, they were the Dwarapals of Vaikuntha, when the four Kumars came, they thought, just as Putana thought, oh, they're just little children, you know, we can neglect them. Because when the children are all, they say so many things, we don't pay attention. So they treated these four Kumars like that, but actually these four Kumars were also Nitya Mukta Brahmavadis. They were liberated souls. Even Vaishnavas, they have their own sampradaya. Now it's called Nimbarka Sampradaya. So these four Kumaras, they somehow or other, they were impelled from within the heart by Paramatma to curse the Dwarapals, Jayavijaya. And they had to come to this material world. Lord Vishnu came to the scene when he understood there was a misunderstanding. He came to clear things up. And he said, no, actually what they've said is good, for whatever reason. When Vishnu says something, you have to eat it. You can't do anything about it. So they were not very happy about that, the Dwarapals, Jayavijaya. But the Lord said, okay, you can have 100 births as devotees, or you can take 3 births as asuras. Which would you like? And they said, well, we want to come back as soon as we can. So we're only going to take 3 births as asuras. First birth was, who knows? Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. When Hiranyakashipu was killed by, I'm sorry, Hiranyaksha was first killed by Varaha. To avenge the death of his brother, Hiranyakashipu decided that this, you know, Vishnu is my enemy, because he knew that Vishnu in the form of Varahadev had killed his brother. So then when he was always hating Vishnu, even though Prahlad was his son, and finally we know the story, he was killed by Lord Narasimhadev's invincible intelligence. And at the moment that he was killed by Lord Narasimhadev, he actually did not realize who it was who was killing him. He did not realize that it was Vishnu. He thought, he didn't know what hit him. this fantastic creature came out of the pillar. Never, unprecedented. You know, he had not read the Bhagavatam yet. So he didn't know the script. And, you know, he just thought, whoever this personality is, he's somebody pretty powerful, but I know that I'm the most powerful person in this universe. And so I can take care of this guy. But he couldn't. So Vishnu killed him in the form of Narasimha. But because he remained ignorant all the way up and through his death, therefore he did not get liberation at this point. He didn't get liberation. Even though the Bhagavatam says, even though Lord Narasimhadev himself says, whoever I kill will be liberated. But at this point he did not get liberation. Why? Because, yeah, his envy was very strong. He had not been completely purified, and he had no knowledge of the Supreme Lord. We were discussing last night, those who were there in the lecture, knowledge is the prerequisite that allows you to take full advantage of devotional service. Otherwise, you will take partial advantage and benefit from it. And you will advance, but it will not be so easy. So, when he was killed by Narasimhadev, he therefore had to take birth again, because he died in ignorance, and he was not thinking of God. He was ignorant. But because he was killed by God, therefore he had fantastic opulence, unrivaled in all the three worlds. He took birth as Ravana. Mm-hmm. And Ravana, being, you know, he was impelled by passion in all things that he was doing. That is the nature of the demon. We know in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spends 2 or 3 verses talking about the godly qualities, and the rest of the chapter, he's talking about the demoniac qualities, just in case you couldn't figure out what's more relevant in your life. Nothing personal intended here, we're all in the same boat here. So, he had these demoniac qualities, including passion, because he was kicked around by passion. One minute it's going to be greed, the next minute it's going to be envy, the next minute it's going to be lust, the next minute it's going to be... anything can happen, you see? So in his Ravana incarnation, he fell prey to which vice? Lust. And not only lust, but whom did he chase after? The wrong woman. He chased after Sita Devi herself. the consort of the personality of Godhead. And Ramayana describes it's like a fool reaching into the mouth of a hungry lion to pull out a tooth. You don't do that. You see? Lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, illusion. These are the vices we all have to suffer from as long as we maintain the demoniac temperament, the demoniac mindset. Anybody know the name Kapila Vatsyayana? I think she's in government now, politics, but she used to be a highly respected professor at BHU and in the realm of aesthetics, you know, things like Nati Shastra and others. So she actually made a quote that was given in this book by, what's his name? I want to say Ravi Varma. I'm not sure if that's him. Anyway, she's quoted as saying that the sthayi bhav of the Indian mind is what? Anybody want to get? Don't. You know this. You've read it. Irsya. Irsya is the sthayi bhav. So no offense, folks. I mean, I have my own anarchas also. But just something. We all suffer from this. This is the point. As long as we embrace the illusion of Maya, then we are going to be kicked around. And in one life, we're going to fall to anger. In one life, we will fall to lust. In another one, greed or envy or madness. Count your blessings if you have a working body and mind, because it won't last. Zurur, it will not last. You see? My wife all chides me when I say this, but I'm going to quote it again. Jabalagatanama tapana vyapai tabalaga kari hari seva. Or as we say in English, use it or lose it. You see? So, the idea here is that as long as we have a working mind and body, we have to offer it to Krishna. Give it to God. Because it will not last, that's for sure. It will not last. Nothing in this world ever does. So as Ravana, he fell to lust and he tried to, he offended the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He offended the Mahalakshmi in the form of Sita Devi. And so he was killed again by Ramchandra. And this time, he was not in complete ignorance as in his previous birth. This time he had some inkling that this person is an incarnation of Vishnu. But his envy was so strong that he could not accept that. So he was killed by Ramchandra and went, and then he took his last birth, he took as Shishupal. In Shishupal, as Shishupal, he retained the envy of his previous two births. But he was constantly absorbed in Krishna because he knew this time that Krishna is the incarnation of Ramchandra who killed me last time. And Ramchandra was Vishnu. So he was seething with envy. His whole life was nothing but vitriolic blasphemy of the Lord. And constantly he was absorbed in hearing Krishna's name and in talking about Krishna in an unfavorable way. You see? But the wonderful nature of Krishna and Krishna's mercy is such that even if one in that attitude takes his name and is constantly remembering Krishna somehow or other, Krishna has this unique merciful characteristic of insinuating himself into the heart of the living entity and attracting him with his unique, the name Krishna means what? All attractive. And the other incarnations do not have this particular potency that Krishna has. This is the point that Rupa Goswami is making. Actually, Parashar Muni makes it in the Vishnu Purana, which he's quoting. So, the wonderful characteristic of worshipping Krishna in particular is that Krishna has such mercy, and we're seeing that mercy in this verse with Putana. She came to kill him, but, you know, she got attracted to him at the same time, and he was also very merciful to her, and she was delivered in this way. And so was Shishupal. We know that when the blasphemy had reached a critical mass, as Rupa Goswami describes it, or as Vishnu Purana describes it, he's quoting Vishnu Purana, he had become increasingly purified by chanting the holy name, even in hate. And when that purification reached, we call it Ajnata Sukriti, when that purification reached a critical mass, so to speak, at that time his anarchas were destroyed, And he had a flash of insight that this person is Vishnu, and I actually have an eternal relationship with him. I've fallen down. He was enlightened just at the point that that disc was flying towards his neck. And when it cut his neck off, then immediately he was liberated. He went back to Vaikuntha to resume his form as Jaya because of Krishna's mercy. This is a wonderful, unique characteristic that Krishna displayed. Incomparable mercy. I mean, there are different excellences that we say Krishna has, according to the Shastras. Rupa Goswami has compiled many, many quotes. He's written many books, and in those books he's compiled quotes from many other Shastras, and he's done this in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu as well. In that book he outlines four special characteristics that only Krishna has that are not shared by any other Vishnu Tattva form. Does anybody know what those are? So he's got Lila Madhurya, and? Venu Madhurya and Rupa Madhurya. He's infinitely beautiful. What's the fourth one? I'm sorry? Yeah, but that's Krishna. Huh? Lila Madhurya, Rupa Madhurya, Venu Madhurya, and?
Renounced.
Sorry?
Renounced?
No. Just now it escapes my recollection as well. But there are four of them. In this way, Krishna is unique, but here we see a fifth one. Krishna has mercy that is more than anyone else. Now, where does this fit in with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Because we hear, those who are in the know, who have studied the Shastras, they understand that the Shastras actually speak of a very confidential incarnation in Kali Yuga, and that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is considered to be also this personification of mercy. The reason is that he is not different from Krishna. He is not an incarnation of Krishna. He is actually Krishna himself, but in a form that is unique for various confidential reasons. So, this is the mercy of Lord Krishna. Now let's see if we want to dilate on anything else that Prabhupada has said here. First of all, the Lord assumes these forms, Krishna as his baby form. Now, do we have Bal Gopal in Vaikunth in Golok Vrindavan? No. Yeah, Bal Gopal is not in Golok Vrindavan. That's right. Krishna's baby form, small Komara Lila, it does not exist in Vaikuntha. The idea is existing in Vaikuntha, but the form is only manifest here in this world. This is another thing. These are confidential things. So, it's described actually in the Chaitanya Chandramrita of Kavi Karnapur, I think, if I recall correctly, that the Lord actually appreciates coming to the material world and performing his pastimes here, in the material world, even more than those in Golok Vrindavan. That's an ironic thing, isn't it? You wouldn't think it was like that, but it is. And why is that? Well, if you're in Madhurya Rasa, then there's actual, you know, there's actual danger. Because especially with the gopis, we know there's different kinds of love, conjugal love of Krishna. There's Swakya love, which is the queens of Dwarka, wedded love, but the gopis don't belong in that category. They're unwedded love. They're not married to Krishna. In fact, they're married to someone else. That makes it very dangerous to serve Krishna in this material world, which heightens the lila, the pastimes of the Lord. Similarly, when we, just like when we preach Krishna consciousness, if we're preaching to the choir, so to speak, as they say in English, to those who are already devotees, it's okay, but there's no real challenge there, you see? When we preach to those who are real demons, real life, it's like when you join the army and they put you through training, sometimes they use rubber bullets and sometimes they train with live ammunition. And when the ammunition has the potential to kill you, then you know you've got to really be serious. So it's like that. Here it's live ammunition. They're real demons that we're dealing with. And that makes Krishna's pastimes actually more relishable. We can't understand this because we're conditioned by Mahamaya. But for the devotees who are conditioned by Yogamaya, they don't see any problem. They only see the challenge. And they relish that because they have full faith in Krishna. Just as the cowherd boys, they saw this massive snake lying in the middle of the road with his mouth wide open, and they all just happily ran right in, singing, lunch packs in hand. They had no problem. You see? They're just dancing their way in, and they know very well that it doesn't matter. Even if it's a snake, Krishna can take care of it. See, this is the devotee. This is faith. Do we have that faith? That's why we're here. That's why we're here. But the devotees who are the Nityasiddha devotees, or the even the Raganuga devotees who are perfect, then they actually like to deal with Krishna in the material world, because there's more tension, you see. It makes the ecstatic pastimes more relishable, because they see it that way. They don't see it as a threat or a danger or a real fight or anything like that. So these are some few things here we can talk about. But I mean, what's relevant for ourselves? The point is that we need mercy. We were discussing last night. There are all different ways that Krishna has mentioned in Bhagavad Gita that a person can actually approach the Supreme Absolute Truth, and we don't have any of them. We're not big Vedantists, we're not big, you know, pious workers, we've never practiced yoga. Sanatana Goswami put this most eloquently. He said, Na prema shravanari bhaktirapiva yogo thava vaishnavo jnanam va shubhakarma va kiyadaho sajjatirapyastiva hinarthadhika sadhake tvaitathapya chedya mula sati he gopi janavallabhavyatayate ha ha madashaivamam. That means, I don't have any prema. Prema means perfect, pure love of Godhead. I don't have that kind of thing. And I don't even have real attachment for the process of developing that prema, which is bhakti yoga. Na prema shravanadi bhakti raviva. Yogo thava vaishnavo. I'm not a devotee. I've not practiced yoga. Not a yogi. Jnanam va. I haven't cultivated jnana. I'm not a big Vedanta. Vedantist, Shubha Karmava, I've never actually performed any real significant austerities or penances or sacrifices. What's a significant landmark sacrifice that you might perform in this world? What's the famous one we always hear about? Ashwamedha Yajna. Who performs Ashwamedha Yajnas today? We're lucky if we can put $1.25 in the hundi. we're proud of that also. You see? Shubha karmava kiyata ho sa jatirapyastiva. Are, I'm not even born in a nice family. Now I can say this, but what family was Sanatana Goswami born in? GSB. Gaudiya Saraswat Brahmin. The family was from Karnataka. And he actually did have a very good birth, but because of his association with the Mohammedan government of Hussein Shah in Bengal, therefore he considered himself an outcast, and other Brahmins also considered him an outcast, because, you know, any little flaw, you know, the rest of the community is always going to point at you, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That's how it works in this world. So he thought, I'm not even, I don't even have a nice jati either. So, hinarthadhika sadhake, as far as sadhanas go, you know, I am completely bereft of any means of delivering myself. I don't have any, and no assets in spiritual life. This is what he's saying, or even in religious life, because there's a difference. Therefore, he gopi janavallabhavyate athe ha ha madashaiva mam. All I can do is cry out for you, gopi janavallabhav, please, you help me. If you help me, then I've got a chance. Otherwise, there's no hope. In this Kali Yuga, this is the means. When we say Harernama, 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 Iva Kevalam, Halo Nasjeva, Nasjeva, Nasjeva Gatiranyatha. It's very emphatically stated, because all we have is this hope that we can take advantage of Krishna's extreme mercy that we've heard by attracting his attention through chanting his holy name in helplessness. How? What kind of helplessness? Prabhupada said, like a child crying for its mother. When we chant like that, which means when we cry like that, then Krishna, he has to come. Should I tell this story?
Yeah.
I told someone last night. Someone in New York recently told me a story. I don't necessarily verify it, or I can't, you know, say it's what it means. There was a girl in South India, Chennai, and she was constantly harassed by ghosts, it would seem. She could not sleep at night, so bad it was. So somehow or other, somebody told her that, you know, if you chant this mantra, Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare
Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then these things will not bother you anymore. So she developed a little faith in chanting this Maha Mantra. So she started to chant the Maha Mantra, and then after some time, you know, this problem was less. The problem actually went away. All the boots were not bothering her anymore. Prates, boots, pishachis, whatever they were. So she was chanting like this, and then, you know, she actually got some attachment for the chanting, because she knew it was Krishna and she knew it was God. So then one time she was invited to a friend's wedding, and you know, in India the wedding is a huge deal. So she was dressed very nicely and she went to the hall, and you know, somehow, I don't know the details, but somehow or other, after the wedding was over, she was left behind. Maybe her ride went without her or something. She was stuck without a ride, and eventually only the janitor's there cleaning up, and she's all alone, and she's wondering what to do now, you know. And by this time it's late at night, and you know, in India, I mean, you can read the news what happens if you're a woman in India. Not always a very good thing, because the people are so out of control nowadays. You know, in Vrindavan, where I live, the village women are afraid even to go in the morning and answer the call of nature. Even you go two of them together, they just hung a couple of them, isn't it? It's just not safe. So at the end of this thing, that it's time to close the hall, the janitor says, yeah, I'm sorry, I've got to lock up, She says, well, where are the buses? She says, they usually come out there, but last bus came at, 9:30 or whatever it was. So she's out there waiting, and she didn't have any shelter, but she had this Maha Mantra, and she was chanting very seriously, Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And, you know, after some time, she's waiting and waiting, and she knows that no bus is going to come, but where else is she going to go? She just took shelter of the name. Now, then a young man came and stood next to her. An unknown young man, and he tried to talk to her, but she wouldn't look at him, she wouldn't talk to him, she's just chanting the Hari name, Hare Krishna. So he says, I can take you to your house, it's no problem, you shouldn't be out here alone, it's dangerous. And she would not reciprocate it anyway, she just wouldn't even look at him, she didn't look at him. Eventually, out of nowhere, after some time, maybe 12:30 at night, this bus comes out of nowhere down the road, and it stops right there where they're standing. And there's a driver in the bus, and the rest of the bus is empty. She gets on the bus. What else is she going to do? The boy got on the bus. The boy paid her fare. And she's getting scared now. What's going on? What am I going to do? So she's chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Whole way. Finally she got near her neighborhood, and she got off the bus. The boy got off the bus. And she said, why are you following me off the bus? He said, well, I have to see that you get home safely. It's dangerous at night. And she just was chanting Hare Krishna. She says, no, I know where to go. I'm near my house. You can go now. And she went home, and she turned around. When she got home, she turned around to see if he was following. He was gone. He disappeared. Nobody there. Right? Isn't that? Did I tell it correctly? So who was this boy?
Krishna.
What did he say? Did he ever say anything inappropriate?
No.
Did he do what Krishna might say? Krishna has, when you chant Krishna's name, he has the responsibility to take care of you. Mm-hmm. Isn't it? Therefore I said, I can't verify what the story means. This is something that was told to me, and it's very interesting story. But the point is that yoga kshemam vahami, Krishna says. When a person takes shelter, ananyas chintayanto mam. Was she ananyas chintayanta? Mm-hmm. Certainly she was. Ananya shintayanto mam ye janaha paryupasate, I have to reciprocate in kind. What does bhakta mean? Bhakta means somebody who participates, right? It means somebody who worships, but it also, bhaj means to participate, to take part in something. Therefore, Krishna says, tansta taiva bhajami, I reciprocate. I worship. You can interpret it that way also. Yayatha mam prabhadyante tansta taiva bhajami, Krishna says. When a person surrenders to me, commensurately I will worship that person also. When you become Krishna's devotee, his only function is to serve his devotees. That's why, where does Krishna live? We call it Krishna Loka sometimes, but what else do we more often call it? Huh?
Goloka.
Goloka. Why Goloka? Cow Loka. Cow world. Why? Why cow world? Because Krishna loves the cows. And what does he do there? He only takes care, he takes care of Yashoda, he takes care of the gopis, he's just reciprocating with his devotees. So even in this world, if we take Krishna's name in this way, then Krishna will also reciprocate with us. It's possible. It happens. This event that I just narrated was about 3 years ago. You know, I don't know if that's before or after that woman was killed in Delhi, but I mean, it's a timely thing, isn't it? Something to think about. Krishna will reciprocate. So, ananyas chintayanto mam ye janaha paryupasate tesham nityabhyuktanam. She was focused, you know, she was chanting already. Yoga kshemam vahami. Krishna will carry what we lack. He will preserve what we have. He protects. He supports. This is his mercy. So these are a few examples. I mean, that, as I said, there's so much we can say about this verse, and there's so much in the commentaries, but I think we'll stop here in the interest of time. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes?
The comment on the fourth one, Rupa, Leela, Venu, the other one is Bhakta Madhurya. Reciprocation.
Okay, yeah. So his pastimes is separate from the devotees. That's the idea.
Another question I had was, if Balagopal doesn't exist in Goloka Vrindavan, what does Putana do as a maidservant?
Yeah. Well, you know, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that she's in Vaikuntha for one thing. That's my understanding, if I recall correctly. But just as demons do not exist in the spiritual world, correct? Because everybody there is a devotee. The demons are in this world. But there's the idea that demons exist in the spiritual world. And similarly, there is the idea that Krishna is just a baby in the spiritual world. But he doesn't manifest that particular form, you see. So she's got the sentiment, but not necessarily the activities to, you know, with reciprocating that particular form of Krishna. It's kind of like, you know, here in the material world, we hear that there are saints, but there are practically none. So in the same way, in the spiritual world, we hear that there are demons, but there are practically none. Or that, you know, you have Balagopal in the material world, that's fine, because Krishna comes and appears to take birth, and appears to grow up, and appears to do so many things that are mundane. But in the spiritual world, it's all based on Kaishora Lila. Even Paul Ganda is also not there. But the understanding is there. The recollection is there, even though the activities are not there and the forms are not there. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Anything else?
I have a question.
Please.
When we hear about Lord Chaitanya, we say that he's most magnanimous. But when Krishna appeared, he put some conditions like Sarvadharman, Parityajya, whereas Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is freely giving, you know, Harinam to everyone. But we also hear about Krishna's mercy here.
Yep.
Is it that Krishna's mercy was only exhibited in like some occasions when he took that Leela?
It does look that way, doesn't it? I don't have a ready answer from Guru Sadhu Shastra, so I don't want to pontificate anything. But it does look like that. In Krishna's pastimes, he's very merciful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lord Chaitanya, as I mentioned, is not really different from Krishna, so this is his mercy form, you might say. When he decides to just give everything for free, that's called Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauranga. See, Audarya and Madhurya. Krishna is chiefly in, he's exhibiting this sweetness and attracting us. But the mercy is actually stronger in Gauranga, in this particular form of mercy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Prabhunanda Saraswati has glorified him.
Yeah, Prabhunanda Saraswati you know very well. So, yeah, he's ad infinitum. He's glorified Lord Chaitanya in his mercy. And like that we can understand. Anything else?
As you mentioned that Putna sees also ignorance as like a Hiranyaksha. So why the Putna got liberated and
that we've explained that Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, they retained respectively their ignorance and their envy of the Lord. But because of Krishna's unique characteristic, his unique property of attracting us and bestowing mercy on us that's, you know, not comparable to the mercy any other form of the Lord displays, therefore he was liberated and sent back home back to Godhead when he was killed by Krishna. And this is the unique fortune of being killed by Krishna. I mentioned when someone is killed by Krishna. I didn't mention when someone is killed by the Lord. Even though Prabhupada throughout his books he kind of implies that, but he actually doesn't come out and say it. So this is preaching. we sometimes we don't want to say things. Is that okay? Is it clear?
Yes.
Okay.
Another question.
Another question.
So
from Asit Prabhu.
So when after Hiranyakashipu was killed and then Prahlad Maharaj he offers prayers to Hiranyakashipu and then Narasimha Dev gives him a boon, right?
Benediction that 21 generations forward and backward will be lived. Rupa Goswami addresses this question there also. If it's a fact that every time the Lord kills Hiranyakashipu, every time Narasimha Dev kills Hiranyakashipu, then the descendants are all liberated, then he cannot come back and repeat that lila, you know, yug-yugman, right? So that's a contradiction. Therefore he says that when he came to kill Jayavijaya in the form of, you know, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, it was a special dispensation to fulfill that curse as a lila. Ordinarily, another form of the Lord as Narasimhadev will come and perform that function. It's kind of like this. In the Kali Yuga, there is an incarnation who will teach the chanting of the holy names. But it's not always Krishna himself in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's some other incarnation. You see? It's a little bit like that. Is that clear? Because that maintains his boon, and at the same time, it, you know, it's logical. Okay.
Yeah. If I think I'm a devotee, in a subtle fashion, I'm still envious of Krishna.
If you think you're a devotee in a subtle way, you're still envious of Krishna.
I'm asking, could that be possible? That in subtle.
It's possible. It's possible. I mean, if the person is thinking, I'm a devotee. And all these others, they don't know what's going on. This is called Kanishtha Adhikar. Kanishtha Adhikar means the youngest, you know, the most green prerogative. And that's the characteristic of the neophyte devotee, that he thinks that I'm the only one who's a devotee and everyone else is in Maya. You know, I know what's going on and me and the Lord are like this and, you know, that's all that matters. And it's not very highly developed spiritual consciousness. Therefore, it's called Kanishtha. Madhyamadhikar means he begins to see that there are distinctions to be made here. One has to discriminate with regards to the association that one takes. One should, of course, worship the Lord. One should befriend the devotees. One should be kind to those who are ignorant, and one should avoid the envious. These are four critical distinctions that we have to make when we reach the intermediate stage of adhikar, or prerogative. And in order to do that, we have to have the kind of sambandha gyan that I mentioned last night. We have to know what's what and who is who. And that's where things get very complicated. It's a great It says it's as sophisticated as the Gopuram of any South Indian temple. The material world is like that. It's just it's full of energy. The Vichitra, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Then the Uttama Adhikari, he's in a different space because he sees that he's a very advanced devotee. He has full faith in the Shastra, which he's also fully assimilated. But his vision is that everybody else is a devotee. I'm not a devotee. You see? So we have to gauge our condition. And with respect to these teachings, which means we have to know the teachings, which means we have to do what?
Hear.
We said this last night. And Krishna says it in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 1. Yathagnyasasi tachnu. We have to hear. There are many, many things to be said about that, but I think that suffices for now. Yes?
So I have a question. Who controls the human mind? Sometimes say the mind is not in control, out of control, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So who actually controls the mind?
Who controls the human mind? This is an interesting question. Does anybody have some answers for this?
Your desires.
He says desires. Anything else?
Modes of material nature.
Modes of material nature. Anything else?
Krishna.
Krishna. Anything else?
Karma.
Anything else? Huh?
Maya.
Okay, we're getting vague now.
Intelligence.
Okay, I mean, all these answers are correct in a way, in a sense. The fact of the matter is that it's not like there's some genie within the mind micromanaging our every thought. You know? Actually, the way Krishna manages is the way any good manager manages. He delegates. And he's got these devatas, you know, you can say mid-level management of the cosmic manifestation.
Moon god is there.
Yeah, moon god and, you know, others who are controlling deity of the mind. But, you know, it's also not incorrect to say that Maya is controlling because the moon god is working for Durga Devi.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's also not incorrect to say that the intelligence controls the mind, but that's when we're Krishna conscious. And are advancing, and it's also not incorrect to say that the three modes of material nature control the mind, because sangat sanjayate kama, whatever you associate with, that's what's planted in your mind, and then, you know, by contemplating what just happens to waft into your mind and sticking on it, then you get some subtle attachment, and from that attachment you get a desire, and then from the desire you act. So it's an automatic process in a sense. The psychologists often argue about this, that some say it's, you know, is it nature or is it nurture, as they say. You ever heard these terms?
Mm-hmm.
Nurture means basically the association that you have. Nature means, you know, what you've brought to the table with you when, you know, upon being born. So there are different kinds of associations that will affect us. In the 11th canto, it said you've got dravya sambhava doshas. That's to say you're dealing with faulty assets. You know, you might say in the general sense. Then there's desha sambhava doshas, that the environment is bad. And then there's atma sambhava doshas, means that, you know, the baggage that you got inside, that you brought with you from your last life, that may be causing it as well. This whole shebang, we might say, is all part of an important category that we call samskar, the mental impressions that are placed on our mind. They all play a part. And that's why it's very, very important to be aware of this and to monitor and to control this, as she said, by the intelligence. It's not like there's, you know, some devil within us. This is Christian philosophy, Christian theology. They actually say that there's some competitor of God within each of us, and, you know, he's like pushing us, do the wrong thing. It's not so much like that, but, you know, one could perceive it in that way. You know, so they have some basis for that idea. Our scriptures describe this situation very scientifically and in great detail. The problem is that we usually run out of interest before we actually assimilate everything that there has been said about it. So, again, we have to hear and understand the process. In chapter 14, in chapter 17 and chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita, these things are discussed in great detail, and elsewhere throughout all these literatures. But, I think that's probably the best answer I can give in short form right now. Okay, anything else?
One more here.
Yeah. Okay, I can't see. Okay, yes.
I heard you mention Golokam and Vaikuntham differently. So, is that something we should be aspiring for, or like Krishna decide for himself? I mean, just in case.
Oh, that's a very good question. He's thinking about his future. That's what I like, strategic planning. So, the fact of the matter is that in this human form of life, if we are serious about spiritual life, and if we try to reawaken our spiritual consciousness, it's just a matter of time before we realize that I've got to make some choices. I've got to make some choices. This is a big, big topic. And, we have, Rupa Goswami has divided bhakti yoga into different divisions of sadhana. There's one branch of sadhana bhakti is called vaidhi sadhana bhakti. That is to say, we follow the rules and regulations that are for bhakti yoga that are enjoined in the shastra given by the sadhus and the gurus. Then there's also raganuga sadhana, which means that we are, focusing on the way that a particular nitya siddha parishad of the Lord is applying these principles. Say Nanda Maharaj or the Gopi Janas of Vrindavan are the main thing, and but other devotees also. Someone is attracted in a certain way, he will follow a particular liberated devotee of the Lord, and we will see that the same principles are applied in slightly different ways by different devotees according to their desire and according to their natural affection. So then the question becomes, is it Krishna's choice or is it my choice who to follow, correct? So the fact of the matter is that bhakti yoga is ultimately not just a philosophical, it is certainly not a mechanical process, and it's also not a legal one. It's love. And with love, if 50% of the one party is 50% and the other party is the other 50%. You cannot say that we are not as important as Krishna in the realm of the love that we have to offer him. Because Krishna is mainly interested, from his perspective, he's mainly interested in what we have within our hearts. And from our perspective, we're mainly interested in what he has within his heart. This is the nature of love. And so you cannot say that it's Krishna's decision. And you cannot say also that it's your decision, because it's understood that Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabhunai Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Karaye Adai. Again, in Chaitanya Charitamrita he says, this Krishna consciousness or this bhakti that we have is eternally established within the heart. It's already perfected within our heart, but it's very covered over. Everybody here is in IT, I can assume safely. And so the analogy is like when you've got your desktop and you've got 1,000 things open on your desktop, it's pretty hard to see what's the original thing running underneath. The program is running, but it's covered by so many, cluttered up by so much other distractions. That's what our life is like. I mean, our spiritual life, our eternal constitutional position is, it's still running, but it's been kind of been double-clicked or something, and so, or single-clicked, I suppose. So you've got to close out some apps, and you've got to, minimize things, and then you can actually remember what's actually going on here in the mind. And that is the process of bhakti yoga. At a certain stage of bhakti yoga, after we attain to nishtha bhakti, that is firm bhakti that does not waver any longer, and that we do not fall down, then we actually get some taste, real taste. When that taste develops, we become attached to that taste, addicted even, Prabhupada used to use the word. Then there's some awakening of bhava, what we call bhava bhakti. So Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti or Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, it should lead to this Bhava Bhakti. The stage of Bhava is the awakening of some, you know, emotion for Krishna in a certain flavor, in a certain trajectory or direction, a certain style, or as I said earlier, a certain application, following in the footsteps of a particular devotee that we would like to emulate. Usually that desire will arise spontaneously as a result of the following the process of bhakti. So it's neither our own choice, neither is it Krishna's, you know, pushing it on us, so to speak. It's a natural development of what's already perfect within our heart. You just have to close out all the other programs on the desktop. And that's called anarjana vritti. So I might as well, because I've, in patchwork manner, I've described these stages, but let's go through them all. When we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, and when we hear from these shastras and keep association with more advanced devotees, this is the basic process, and this will, you know, this is called bhajana kriya. In the association, when we invest our faith in good association and engage in these practices, then the anarthas will become removed. What does anartha mean? The things within the heart that are dirty, unwanted, antithetical, obstacles. We have misconceptions, we have attachments, we have some envy, we have certain, you know, physical or psychological problems that we have to work with. So many different kinds of anything obstructing this practice of pure devotional service, that's called an anartha. By practicing the process of devotional service very fervently, in good association, these anarthas will be worn away. When they are worn away, we become fixed. When we're fixed, we get a real taste. When we get addicted to that taste, then bhava can awaken. And bhava is nothing but the dawning of pure love, which is called prema. Just like when the sun rises in the east, you get a sense, okay, it's going to be dawn pretty soon. That's bhava. The heart has begun to melt in love. And when it's fully arisen, the sun of Krishna prema, then the heart is completely melted. There's no anarthas, there's no question of any of these illusions. Everything is clear. We are situated in our eternal constitutional position as a pure devotee in a particular form. In this Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has particularly emphasized the love which is given to us by the Gopi Janas of Vrindavan. Ramya kachit upasana vrajavadhu vargena ya kalpita. The method of love which was conceived of by these gopis is the topmost. So, that's the one we emphasize. Is that clear? Anything else? Ladies first.
I'm always confused what is the difference between the karma and the free will.
Yeah.
For example, I would like to chant mala one round at least a day, but I'm not able to do it.
Is it my karma or is it my choice? Yeah, yeah. Well, it's kind of, you know, to be liberal, I will say it's kind of, you can say it may be both. But karma and free will, in fact, are two different things. Karma is what conditions us or predisposes us to make a particular choice. In that way, you can say it's your karma. You see? But free will is more powerful than karma because it's a spiritual thing. It is the function of the soul itself, the desire. That's all we can do. We can't really change our karma on a mundane level, at least. And we can't, you know, I mean, we can only make our own choices. We do have limited free will within a certain realm. But the difference between piety and impiety is that when we're pious, it becomes easier to make the right decision and less likely that we'll make the wrong decision. When we become impious, it's just the opposite. It's easier to make the wrong decision and unlikely that we'll make the good decision. And that's why sometimes we see there are some people that you just cannot help. Despite how much energy you put into them, or relationships, or people, no matter what you do, it's just not going to work. Because the karma is locked into place. Someone asked me last night about humanitarian work in this regard. The humanitarian effort is predicated on the assumption that I can make a difference. And you can't. You cannot make a difference because you cannot change another person's karma. This is something we don't like to hear often in this world. It's just like, you know, especially here in America, that's what America is for. Everybody's thinking, you know, you can become a millionaire. When I was young, they used to teach us a song, "Every boy can be president." It's actually not true. Everybody wants to be a millionaire. So how come some people working hard their whole life, they never get anywhere? And some people, they don't work. And the money just comes out of nowhere. How, you've got to describe this. How is it happening like this? Only karma can really explain that. So, you know, what do we say? Likhitam api lalate pranchitam kaha samartha. Nobody's able to overcome whatever. They say there's an indelible barcode printed on everyone's forehead. Only the devatas can read it. And it's in Sanskrit, probably. So even if you can, you know, figure out a program that, you know, you got to learn it. So the point is that when we commit sinful activities, that's why we say in Krishna consciousness, we avoid these sinful activities. Because it's like pouring water on a fire that you're trying to start. It's antithetical. It doesn't work, you see. So we're more likely to make bad decisions when we are generally suffering from bad karma, which is why it's not a good idea to go there. Is that okay? Is it clear? But, you know, in essence, karma and free will are completely separate. You know, the point is, no matter how what your condition is, if you have this mercy that we're talking about from Krishna, and you decide to operate underneath the shelter of that mercy, then you can overcome all obstacles. What does Krishna say in chapter 18? Anybody know the verse? No. About overcoming... Okay, not that one. Just contiguous with that. Sarva durgani, machitta sarva durgani, mat prasada trishyasi, atachetva mahankara, nashroshyasi, vinamshyasi. You see? Therefore, again, here Krishna is again, as we said last night, he's emphasizing the importance of hearing. If you don't hear me, and hearing means acting, you know, I've told you everything already. Yatechasi tathakuru, like a good parent, isn't it? The parent says, okay, you've got choices. If you do this, this is what's going to happen. If you do that, the other thing's going to happen. Now you choose what to do. And the kid always makes the wrong choice, and then you give him time out. And then he learns. You see? So Krishna is like that. You can surrender to me and follow these teachings faithfully, without envy, then you will, sooner you'll be liberated. Otherwise, you don't have to listen. You can go and take shelter of Maya, but you should understand she's going to beat the daylights out of you. It's kind of like when the kids are nonsense, we send them to a stern uncle for discipline. Right? That's Maya. She's the headmistress of the School of Hard Knocks. That's this material world we're living in. I don't remember your question, but I hope it's been answered. Yeah. Okay, so did you have a question also or no? Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else? Oh, he wants to do Kirtan. Can we do more Kirtan? That's his question.
Okay.
You decide. What time is it now?
It's already 11. It'll get late for Prabhu's lunch.
Yeah, it's probably, we have to give the lecture in San Jose tonight. And we have to, you know. It's a 2-hour drive, and then, you know. Okay, 5 minutes.
5 minutes, yeah.
Maaf
kijiye.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai!
Hare Krishna. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama,
oh. Jai!
Mukundas Prabhu ki! Jai!